Welcome to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, founder of Players Next, and your host for today's show. For our return listeners, we're glad to have you back. And for first-time listeners, we hope you enjoy the ride. Before we get started and welcome today's guest, I wanted to take a few moments to share my journey in youth sports. During my school years, I was a successful multi-sport athlete. After a college career derailed by injury, I later went on to compete professionally on golf's mini tours. Following those experiences, it was my privilege to build a junior golf program where I helped develop more than 50 D1 college players, many of whom went on to compete professionally. And finally, for the past decade, I've lived the youth sports parent experience, guiding and supporting my three children that compete in multiple sports at a very high level. In short, over the past 40 years, I have lived every aspect of youth sports as a player, a coach, an entrepreneur, and finally, as a parent. So what is Players Next and this show all about? Over the past 25 years, youth sports has experienced unprecedented growth. Yet today, the youth sports community still lacks an accessible resource that delivers impartial guidance, tools, and support necessary to succeed. In collaboration with experienced athletes, coaches, and parents, Players Next has developed a blueprint for that solution. Our mission is clear: to become the leading resource and community for youth sports. Our core values are simple: to inspire, empower, and support players, parents, coaches, and organizations engaged in youth sports. And our plan is incremental: to first start the conversation about youth sports, and once people are talking and sharing, anything is possible. Before we go any further, I would like to express my thanks to the WCHL team and our sponsors supporting this quest. Today's show is made possible by Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer, specializing in golf and sports turf equipment solutions for more than 50 years. Revels Turf and Tractor is proud to support the UNC, Duke, NC State, and Durham Bulls field maintenance crews, as well as promote its innovative North Carolina Signature Field program designed to deliver much-needed support to high school athletic facilities. We invite you to learn more about Revels Turf and Tractor online at revelstractor.com. We'd also like to thank Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks. Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks were designed to help kids eat right and do well in school. Their snacks are all natural and loaded with learning, education in every bite. Dick and Jane Educational Snacks are available at amazon.com. Simply search Educational Snacks. On today's show, we are pleased to have a special guest from the soccer world, Michael Milazzo. Michael returns to the NCFC coaching staff after working with the team during the 2016 North American Soccer League spring season as a performance analyst and assistant coach. Prior to returning to North Carolina, Michael spent the 2015-2016 season in the MLS as the academy director and head coach of the Columbus Crew Soccer Club U17-U18 academy team. Milazzo's connections to our local community run deep, and they stem from his 13 years spent working at Castle from 1999 through 2011, which were highlighted by his role as academy director and club general manager, as well as being the head coach of the Castle Chelsea FC Academy from 2007 to 2011. Over the past decade, I have known Michael personally and professionally, and he is truly one of the brightest stars in the soccer world. Without further ado, Michael, welcome to Players Next Live.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure, and as I said to you earlier, great to have you back in the Triangle. So the Triangle's very lucky, Michael, to have you back in the area, both in the professional soccer world as well as the youth soccer world. I wonder if you can share a little bit about NCFC, its plans, and how you see the direction of professional soccer in our region growing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm able to come back here really at a critical time for the youth soccer community as well as the professional soccer community. So, with tremendous support from ownership, from Steve Malik, local businessman here, took over the professional team, previously known as the Carolina Railhawks, after a 10-year tremendous run. And we went through a rebrand initially at the pro level, and quickly generated a lot of interest, not just locally, but also regionally and nationally. And quickly from there on, we've been able to expedite this collaboration between two of the largest youth soccer clubs, which was Capillary Soccer League and TSC. And we're able to bring the two together, to formulate NCFC Youth under one umbrella. So tremendous for our community to collaborate between the two soccer leaders in our marketplace. And then obviously with the evolution of bringing the Courage back as well with NC Courage. So under the umbrella of North Carolina Football Club will be the youth component as well as the women's professional team and the men's professional team. And we want to unify the community to support the game and grow the game in our area.
Well, that's exciting news, and having had experience with the local clubs, I think that scale and all the talent that converges on that new plan has got to be terrific for players and families and everyone involved in it. How far is the reach geographically now, would you say, realistically?
Well, now with the collaboration, we'll cover obviously all of Wake County into Durham County and I would say parts of Orange County as well. So that was part of Steve Malik's vision, was to truly represent the state of North Carolina at the highest level, and that speaks volumes for his vision. So we'll cover those three counties, and we have been for a number of years drawing in players that come from about an hour to an hour and a half radius.
Terrific. That's it really sounds like great plans. Before we jump more into the focus of youth soccer and youth sports, I did have some interest from our listeners on at the professional level. There's a perception that MLS still lags from some of the longtime European major leagues. Share your thoughts on that gap between U.S. professional soccer and those strong European leagues. And do you think we'll ever see parity, or is there sort of room at the table for all of them to succeed?
Well, as the game grows at a professional level here in the U.S., and certainly the MLS is driving this, and U.S. soccer from a youth national team perspective, the key component is creating a professional pathway for the young players. In Europe, players are assets. They are developed within a certain style of play with the objective of going through their academy to eventually reach to their professional team. They put in a comprehensive player development package for them that covers every aspect of the word development. Here in the U.S., we're just beginning that process. And that's why we're excited to be moving in that direction as it relates to NCSC. Now we are a tremendous territory that's obviously an anonymous territory. But going back to the MLS and comparing it to our European counterparts, they have a professional pathway for their academy players, and there's a clear objective, and that is to produce a first team player. We're now on that path, and that has been supported by U.S. Soccer, the Federation, as well as the MLS. The one glaring difference is that the players here within the U.S., due to child labor laws, can't go to certain European countries, whereas in the European Union, they're able to be sold on the market. So we're looking at keeping our best players here and producing them within our own academy structure to be successful to help grow our game, where the Europeans have those players as assets are a little bit more readily available in the market, especially in the transfer window. And they're sold for quite a bit of money.
Yeah, that's, I think, a little bit foreign here in the States, thinking of our kids as assets, but it certainly produces the terrific success at the professional level there. I think the college soccer world here probably is some, how does that fit into that equation?
Well, I think college soccer programs are vital. They are certainly part of the player development pathway for many players. We can cross-reference a number of players just on the latest U.S. men's national team, and I'll reference the men's side of the game first. Looking at the number of players that have recently played under Bruce Arena in the last two World Cup qualifiers, a number of those players, Clint Dempsey, for example, first one that comes to mind, went through a tremendous youth soccer program in Dallas, Texas, went to Furman University, and then continued on to the MLS, and then eventually made his way abroad. So there's a great example, and there's a multitude of other examples that show the value of the college soccer program in the player development pathway. It is changing a little bit, though, because of the investment that the ownership from the MLS are putting into their USL teams, which are their second teams.
That's terrific. That's a great fit and a great segue. We're coming up on our first break, Michael, and we'll be right back to talk more soccer with Michael Mulatto. Michael, that's a great summary of the professional soccer landscape and how that dovetails into youth soccer here. And it sounds like the U.S. clubs are on an exciting path, and I think there'll be a response if it's not already happening as those clubs get entrenched and build the kind of program you described. So as we talk a little bit more and dovetail towards youth soccer a little bit, share some of your perspectives on youth soccer as you were growing up and maybe in some ways that our listeners might find valuable. Compare that experience to what's going on today.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I really can kind of sum it up in two buckets. It's team development versus player development. You know, as I was growing up, and I had some amazing coaches, and I played for an amazing teammates and a great club structure, but it was about the team. And I think over the last 10 to 15 years now, you started to see a shift in approach and clubs' philosophies and their methodology to reinforce the individual within the collective. And that's a phrase that we use in our industry quite a bit. You know, we do play within a team sport, but we are focusing on the individual player development within the team component. And that's been a big change, number one. And certainly the tip of everyone's tongue recently is, and this is a constant debate of winning versus player development. And if you really dissect it, you can accomplish both, because many of us will say winning is part of development. Players need to understand what it means to compete and to deal with different games, scenarios, being up a goal, being down a goal, what is our psychological response. And so that's important to the player's development. So I would say that those were the two biggest things, that growing up, it was a greater emphasis on winning and the team development. And now we start to see a higher concentration of player development, the individual within the collective, de-emphasizing winning at all costs and really focusing on a particular way of playing, a style of play that teams and clubs can identify.
That's terrific. That actually seems to connect well with your description of the longstanding European model and how the U.S. model is now in some ways mirroring and hopefully trying to improve that model. Because under the European model you described, it would seem that, you know, that individual player development, not abandoning the team aspect, but is sort of the focus. And would you say that's consistent with what we're trying to do now here in the States?
Yeah, absolutely, because there's such an emphasis as we talk about the professional player pathway, even for a young academy player, you'll start to see within the MLS and even now within NCFC's academy structure is that we want to develop the players beginning in around 10, 11 years of age. And as they grow into the 12s and 13s and they graduate through the system, they develop certain qualities, certain characteristics that emphasize a style of play. Now in Europe, they're trying to grow from within, and they want to develop certain players that fit a certain style. And you'll start to see that now, and I would encourage all of our listeners to keep watching the MLS, because now as the MLS grows, you will start to detect a different style of play for each team. So I recently had an amazing professional experience working in Columbus, Ohio for the Columbus Crew last year. And the way, based on the first team style of play, that was emphasized all the way through on all three academy teams. And we were looking to develop certain players in the team to play a certain style so that eventually a player would be able to appear and arrive to the first team. And you're starting to see that more and more here within the professional clubs, not just MLS, but NASL, as well as USL within the United States.
That's very exciting. It sounds like there's a terrific roadmap in place, and it's just a question of time and patience as the system starts to bear fruit down the road. As you take a few moments and you're sharing your perspective on professional soccer, youth soccer, take a step up, a couple thousand feet up, and share your thoughts on the state of soccer in the U.S. today. We know it's had amazing growth over the last couple of decades. How is that trend continuing? Is it leveling off? And also, how does that compare to other parts of the world? Is soccer growing as quickly around the world as it is here?
I think it's growing more rapidly here. I remember being in a conference in Florida when Bruce Arena was the national team coach in his first cycle, and he said to all of us that the game will really be part of the fabric in our United States when your children, it's not going to be your generation, it's going to be your child's generation. And I think that's the time now. So I've grown up with the game. Now my son has grown up with the game, and I think it's this generation, the kids that are now playing. So I have a son who's 13 years old. He's grown up with Champions League. He's grown up with the MLS. He's grown up with watching the World Cups. And when I was growing up, we didn't have all of that readily available to us. So I think it's grown extremely, extremely quick. Looking at the next 10 years, it's an exciting 10 years because if you think about it, these players that are 12, 13 years old, in the next 10 years, they are going to be the ones that are eligible to participate in the World Cup. They will be at their peak. To have an opportunity to play professionally, to have an opportunity to represent the United States at the age of 22 and 23, having grown up with the game and it be synonymous with their everyday environment.
That's a great answer. Talking globally for one more second, we see the scale of China in so many aspects. Is China, have they embraced soccer at the same level of intensity? Do you see that large population putting the resources towards this great game?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you look at the whole quantity versus quality debate, and I know that there's been some recent articles put out about the financial investment that country's put into their youth development. They certainly have the quantity, and I now think that they're looking at the quality. So, and there's a great reference on an amazing book called Soccernomics, and in that book they talk about in a certain amount of time in the next 10 to 20 years, the United States and China should be world powers in this game simply based on numbers, on pure volume. But, you can have the numbers, but you certainly need the quality. And I think that's where U.S. soccer and the MLS and everybody working to grow the game in our country over the last number of years have really put us on a platform to succeed. And going back to your first point, 10 years down the road, I think it's going to be a really exciting time for all of us in the game.
It definitely sounds like it. So we've got a couple of minutes left in this segment. Another question, you mentioned access to watching different leagues around the world, technology, television. We live in a world where both parents and kids have less time and technology is at the center of their lives, both at work, at home, at school. How has technology impacted soccer, and can you share any examples of where technology is helping the path that you've described?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have a lot of positive things to say about technology. Two things come to mind, and of course this could be debated and argued, but I really feel that the kids playing FIFA on Xbox or some type of gaming device that's similar to that, they're playing the game and seeing the game, and when you see it on these TVs, the game is real. So there's a lot to be gained from it. I know firsthand that my son understands the transfer market because he plays Football Manager, or he's playing FIFA on his Xbox, and he understands tactics because of the way that game is designed. And so they're watching it, but they're also interacting with the game, and I think that's a real valuable tool. Now, those people that would counter argument that, right? Well, all the kids are in front of playing video games, or they're on their computer, and they're not outside working on their craft. I think that that's where the balance comes. And what's been missing is the kids playing pickup, playing in the backyard, playing basketball, playing soccer, playing American football, doing other sports that brings out the best in their chosen sport. So I think it's a positive, and certainly some positive things come out of it. The second thing is with all the information, everything is in their hand. So with the emergence of smartphones, what we've learned in player development is that most of the children are all visual learners. So our ability to see clips on YouTube and send it to them on their smartphones to get immediate feedback. The players are learning visually now, and we can use the way we use video to teach is also a real positive, I think, with technology. And without smartphones and not without the kids having them always in their hand, they don't see it. So now I just think technology has aided the learning process because they're such visual learners.
That's perfect. Well, we're coming up on another quick break. We'll be right back with Michael Melazzo and talk more about soccer and youth soccer around the area and the country. Welcome back to Players Next Live. Our third segment today is brought to you by Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks, education in every bite. I'm Rob Jeske, and again, we're honored to have Michael Melazzo of NCFC with us, talking about youth soccer and what's happening in our area in this great sport. So, Michael, we just had some great conversation about technology, and your insightful answers. I had one follow-up question come to mind, which is, as you get into the day-to-day practice with your teams and the player development that you described that's become so important, how is technology and training devices entering into that practice form or kids at home working on their own?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind, Rob, is the utilization of cameras, from GoPro to coaches that are now using iPads and using the video component. So the players now are looking for immediate feedback, certainly immediate gratification, right? But the immediate feedback and our ability now utilizing technology, whether it be with an iPhone, an iPad, GoPro, you're able to look at video immediately. You're able to clip it, send the players the links, because, again, there's that old cliche, a picture's worth a thousand words. And as we talked earlier about how things have changed over the last 20 years. Well, that's just one of the things that comes to mind. I fortunately work in an environment where every single one of our games is videoed from above, from a scope, from approximately 30 feet above. So we are able to analyze the game. We're able to analyze the individual player within the collective. We're able to analyze the team component. And also break it down even more and give the player that type of feedback. So I think that's really, really, truly aided in the development of the player.
That's fantastic. We're seeing it. Some of the other experts in other sports that have joined us have shared similar stories and examples. And I think it's an exciting time where you see technology rather than hearing stories of kids not being active because of technology. You see how it's now benefiting these positive pursuits. Moving on to another question, this is one we ask all of our experts in each sport. So for a parent that does not play soccer and their child comes home tonight and says, I want to take up soccer as a sport, can you help advise those parents on what are the next steps and what do those early stages look like in terms of how they can make that happen?
Yeah, great question. What I would say to that is find an organization that has an organization or a soccer club that is run by professional soccer people that have a huge emphasis on volunteers who are being supported by those professionals as it relates to the education. The question of, hey, I want to come home, I want to try playing soccer is going to be primarily done at a recreational age. So you want to be part of a club or an organization that focuses on the individual, and it goes back to the differences between winning versus development. Putting them in an environment that they can enjoy, that their winning is not part of the philosophy. It is about the enjoyment, the expression, the passion. Be part of an organization that is either run by someone who has been educated or is supporting volunteers that is educating them. And the beauty of our sport is, like, you don't need much. You don't need much. You need some open space. You need a very, very inexpensive ball, and allow that player to express him or herself with the ball, whether it be dribbling or shooting, but just really to enjoy and engage, but in an environment that the kids can feel free. And that's really, really important versus being told, pass here, run here, kick there. Let them express themselves. This game is about decisions, and we learn from every decision that we make in life. And as long as you're in an environment where they're having fun and they can score a ton of goals and they can express themselves, then they're on the right path to truly enjoying the game and then ultimately loving the game and being supportive of the game. Because everybody in our country, we coach, we ref, we were ex-players, we're ex-refs, we're ex-coaches. But what we all need to be are current fans. And that's how this game is going to grow.
Well, that's a fantastic story, and I think we'll provide even more insight than I had hoped. So thank you for that. And dovetailing into taking some of that passion and that roadmap you described, while the game is very simple in terms of needs for that one player, soccer in the U.S. has seen amazing growth over the past 10 to 15 years, particularly at the club level that you've described, great organizations like NCFC and the organizations that came together to form that. How are these local soccer clubs and organizations addressing and managing that kind of growth? While growth is exciting to promote, it also presents other problems in terms of fields and coaches and balls and resources. So I'm curious on that side of the equation, how is that growth being managed?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Certainly in our area here, it's being supported by local communities and the towns and government officials. Facilities are the number one, right? You have growth, you have interest, we want to grow the game, but you need to have a place for the kids to play. We are so fortunate here within the city of Raleigh, the town of Cary, you have Holly Springs, you have a number of different organizations that are supporting our game and other sports as well with investing in facilities. And, having turf fields is so, so important. Obviously, with the change in the weather, unpredictability of it, we need consistency for players. And we're referencing recreational players all the way to professional players. So consistency is key, and having the support of the local city officials, the town officials, and government officials to provide financial resources to help build facilities that have turf, so that the kids can play all the time. So that's the first thing that really comes to mind.
Is the and that's a clearly it's manageable, but an uphill climb, I'm sure, as the growth accelerates. Are you getting enough of? You mentioned the professional soccer people, which obviously you're at the high end of that. Are there enough professional soccer people out there that have the time to give a portion or all of their time to these growing clubs?
Yeah, I believe so. I think people understand. First of all, I think they understand the value of the community. You see it at the MLS, you see it at the NASL level and the USL level. The grassroots soccer program, the professional players, the professional coaches that are working in the afternoons in their local markets to promote the game, to market the game, to coach the kids. You see that. That is very, very common. It's best practice, if you will. To engage in their community. In our marketplace here, there's a number of NCSC players, current professional players, that not only are training as professionals in the morning and competing at the highest level here, but are also coaching club teams. It's part of my particular responsibility, and the other assistant coaches with NCSC Pros Men team also coach in the afternoons as well. For us, that's our legacy. That's how we give back to the game.
Well, that's
by engaging with them in the afternoons and the early evenings to help grow.
That could be the golden nugget here in this whole story, because while soccer is leading the way on that, it's probably foreign to some other sports in this country that might be able to use that template to gain that professional success and to build consistency and resources that the soccer model engagement with that professional team. You think about baseball, and whether it's a major league or minor league baseball team, or you think about football or some other sports, there could be a great roadmap modeling off what's now the U.S. soccer template. So that's exciting.
Yeah, certainly.
We got about a minute before this segment is up, and I thought we'd go to one of our listener questions. Let's try and tackle a quick one. From Charlie, 13 years old in Durham. What's the most effective shot on a PK?
Oh, great question, Charlie. Most effective shot. Well, the most effective shot on the penalty kick is to go low into the corner. That's the most effective one. It's very difficult for the goalkeeper to get to. So I would say keep practicing, pick your corner, and stick with that all the time. Don't change. Just keep perfecting it. Just stick it in that lower bottom-hand corner.
That sounds sounds like great advice. I think I was thinking to myself, I hope he doesn't answer one that goes in. So, well, very good. We are coming up on the end of this third segment. We're going to take our final break, and we'll be right back for our last segment with Michael Malazzo. Welcome back to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, your host, and we are coming down the home stretch of our time with Michael Malazzo of NCFC and one of soccer's shining stars, not just in this area but in the country. So, Michael, well, actually, before we jump into that, I do want to thank our other sponsor. Once again, the segment will be brought to you by Revels Tractor, your local John Deere dealer specializing in golf and sports turf solutions for more than 50 years. So, as we go into these last few minutes, Michael, I thought a question that always seems to come up is specialization, and you know, kids do because of everything and these great new programs like you've described, they get very excited. I don't think specialization is really driven by necessarily negative feelings. It's oftentimes because everything's working really well. So specialization versus multiple sports has become a hot topic in the youth sports world. We often hear conflicting opinions depending on who and when you ask them, and sometimes that leaves players and parents, depending on the stage they're at, somewhat confused. And I wonder if you could just share your thoughts on specialization in youth sports and how it relates to some of those decisions in soccer, and it might be insightful for our families.
Yeah, no, great question. It's certainly a hot topic now, as you indicated. It happens in cycles. The multi-sport component, the balancing act, has resurrected itself. It did go dormant for a number of years, and now it's back. Looking at it personally and professionally, I've always encouraged players to participate in multiple sports up to a certain age, and that age threshold could be 13 or 14 years of age. I think the best piece of advice would be, hey, we're going to focus in on soccer, right? Okay, great. Now let's pick another sport that works similar muscle groups or motor that aids in the motor skill development or biomechanically. And obviously the first one that comes to mind is basketball. So basketball and soccer go hand in hand. It's a good cross-training piece. It's a good multi-sport piece. It uses the same muscles, but it also moves away from the early specialization concept. So, that would be my advice piece. And I work with an age group that's in a growth cycle. That's the other thing I think we need to take in consideration, is that players that are the boys, for example, that are in the age of 12 to 13, where they're experiencing the early stages of puberty and going through their growth phase, rest, number one, is an important part of development. So during their growth phase, they absolutely need to be resting, and we don't need to be compounding them by playing multiple sports, two or three sports at a time during their growth phase. So that's the one thing I need to take into consideration. But what I've been able to do personally and within my within my teams is play soccer, tennis, play basketball, play team handball, sports that are enjoyable to them, that they're able to work similar muscle groups, coordination movements. It aids in the biomechanics and the motor skill that will enhance their soccer ability. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is finding a nice balance between the two. But what we have known and have researched is in Europe now, the concept of sport clubs are becoming prominent. So the soccer clubs are implementing multi-sport concepts to their development developmental pathways and programs for their kids, and you're starting to see that here in the United States as well. It's one of the things that we have picked up from countries like Belgium and Germany, who are very, very similar in the type of soccer player that we deal with here in the United States.
That's fascinating. That concept of within the club is I think helps the business model. It helps the management of from a family standpoint of how many people and organizations you're connected with. So that's very exciting to hear. Great answer. Let's jump over to a few of our listener questions, which are always fun.
Okay.
You just mentioned some aspects of rest and which is so important, rest and nutrition. From Ellen, a mom in Chapel Hill, she asks, over the course of a weekend, what are some ways and tactics to fight fatigue and maintain performance as that tournament wears on? You know, everybody thinks, you know, they're coming fresh to that weekend and they're ready to go and they eat that good breakfast and then five or six games over a couple of days and everybody's lagging. So what are your thoughts and suggestions on that?
Yeah, so in the moment, in the evenings, doing ice baths, in the evenings to increase blood flow. Well, obviously you're going to stop the blood flow, then it increases the blood flow once you get out of the ice bath. So that's a good strategy. Recovering strategies are really key. So foam rolling in the evening, ice baths in the evening, in between games, obviously with the nutrition and hydration piece, but even laying down and elevating your legs to get the blood flowing back to the heart. That could be another way of dealing with some time and some recovery strategy in between games. It really have to rewind back to what the player or the team did the week leading up to the practice. So if you know you're going into a long weekend or your long tournament weekend, you're going to play three or four games. Well, the practices leading up to it shouldn't be that difficult. I know that sounds counterproductive, but physically we don't want to put too much of a load on the kids because you know that they're going to have to perform at 200% of their capacity, which I know sounds really weird, but they're going to be maxed out over the course of the weekend. So rest, nutrition, hydration, ice baths, foam rolling, and getting that blood flow into the heart and get that lactic acid out of their body as much as possible.
Those are all great suggestions, and I appreciate that. And I think you're the one I'd like to have our listeners really pay attention to, especially is that leading up to, whether it's what the club does leading up to that big tournament or what you can do as a player and a parent preparing in terms of rest and good nutrition leading up to that very intensive weekend. I thought that was a great point. So let's Maggie in Durham, 14 years old. She had one other question we can maybe slide in here at the end. Mike, what's the best way for a young player to strengthen their striking power? And you know, they want to give that real get that power and boost on their strikes.
Yeah, Maggie. So focusing on your technique is really, really important because with good technique comes more power. So what I would encourage you, Maggie, is to not be so concerned about how hard you hit it, but how well you hit it. And I would encourage you to use a volleyball, a ball that's a little bit lighter that you can really, really concentrate on your technique. And if you hit it in that sweet spot, that will increase your power over time. But still keep concentrating on the technique.
That's terrific. That's that holds over to many other sports. You know, same thing in hitting a baseball, hitting a golf ball. You know, proper technique and that being correct at that point of contact really happens to increase the power and velocity, not how much you exert. So, well, with that, folks, that brings us right up to the end of our time with Michael Milazzo. Michael, we can't thank you enough for joining us today. All the best to you with your efforts with NCFC. I think that organization has hit a home run by bringing you back into the fold and bringing you back home here. And as time permits, we hope to have on this show many times more to talk about soccer, your team, and youth soccer in our area. So thank you very much, and all the best, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
As we wrap things up for today's show, Players Next and this show want to hear from you as we shape future shows and topics. Many thanks to our sponsors, Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer, their exciting signature field program. Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks, healthy, fun snacks for lunch, after school, classroom parties, and even at halftime. Be sure to visit Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks at Amazon.com by searching Educational Snacks. I also want to take a moment to thank our producer, Aaron Johnson, and the entire WCHL team. They've helped make this show a reality, and we're excited about where it's going. You can follow our progress on Twitter, at Players Next, or online by downloading the new WCHL app and listening and sharing our shows. We hope you enjoyed today's journey in youth soccer, and you choose to join us again in coming weeks where we've got some very exciting guests and topics coming ahead. I thought it was really exciting, Michael Milazzo's insights about the convergence of professional sports and youth sports. And the new template that they're bringing, modeling off the European model, is very, very exciting. And I think there's some attributes to that connection with professional teams and building a robust youth program that will transfer beyond soccer and into other sports. So with that, thanks for your time today. I'm Rob Jeske, and on behalf of everyone at Players Next, remember, it's your dream.